Hello, Sinsanity! Welcome to episode 3 of our podcast. Today we have myself, Clayton Stone, my dad, John Stone, co-host Graham Ashcraft, who so happens to pitch for the Cincinnati Reds, and our good friend Kevin Berman from Sin City. Today we're going to talk a little bit about small market clubs versus large market clubs. Is that still a thing? Are they divided up into tiers? We don't know. We're going to dive into it. Then we're going to hear some funny stories from Kevin Berman because we know he's full of them. And then we'll talk about the bunt. Is it making a comeback? Are teams still allergic to it? We're going to talk a little bit about baseball. We're going to have some fun. We're going to tell some funny stories. And we might even talk about some crossbows and some hunting. That's right. You heard it here first. So how about that, Redlegs fans? What do you say we get this thing started? I just sold out to the perfect condition. Coming alive. Whoa!
Can Hank be in the podcast too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hank, what's up, buddy?
So Graham, before I introduce the our longtime friend of the podcast here, Kevin, I will let you know that urban legend has it back in his playing days, he was known as White Chocolate. I would be interested to know if you had any such nicknames in your days of youth.
My only nickname I got is Dougie. And sometimes I get called Big Country. And then other than that, that's really about it.
Dougie. Well, Big Country meet White Chocolate. Kevin Berman.
I like Dougie. How you doing, man?
How's it going?
Oh, well, we got into a conversation the other day, Graham, about our individual definitions, knowing that Kevin comes from Chicago. As you know, Clayton and I, Cincinnati folks, the definition of big market versus small market. And I guess we were interested in obtaining your perspective on whether there is such a thing and how you would view it in baseball.
I mean, there definitely is. I mean, you can see teams that go out there, and I use the Padres for an example, or like the Dodgers, because the Padres before last season, they went out and spent a bunch of money, and it kind of took everybody by surprise because they were like, quote unquote, like more of a small market type program out west. But they just went out and spent a lot of money because the owner knew he had it and he knew he could back it. And I mean, there are teams that can't necessarily go out and do those things, whether it's just because of the circumstances the owners are in or the GM just doesn't think it's the right decision. But I mean, there is definitely like a big thing with that.
It's interesting you brought up the Padres. That was the late game yesterday against the Cubs. I actually caught that. And, you know, I was just kind of actually perusing the market listings, right? And so it's interesting because, you know, there's people out there that are trying to define the markets, small, medium, large, right? And then you're stratifying against, you know, population versus, you know, actual payroll, right? Relative to the lack of the salary cap, right? But it's funny you jump right into the Padres, right? Because they're hauling the offseason last year with Machado and Bogarts and Soto and Tatis and all the rest of that crew. I mean, that was a hell of a haul for that market. Massive, massive. So payroll wise, do you look at it in terms of market by payroll or by just straight up like size of the actual market in terms of like population? What's your take on that? Interesting.
I mean, I would say it's more based on payroll because it can vary from season to season, just kind of like similar to the Padres. It's like they had Soto last year, but then they ended up trading him away so they can get rid of some of that contract. So that way it's a little cheaper for the owners. But I mean, and a lot of people don't realize just because they get traded doesn't mean the Yankees took over his whole contract. That it could have been that the Padres decided like, hey, we'll eat 40% of his contract and y'all take over the rest.
Yeah, because like when you look at like the media splits versus the, you know, the collective bargain agreement in terms of splits to owners, splits to players, right? And players are like 49% to 51%, right? So John and I go back and forth frequently on, you know, is baseball's player union the strongest union, right? And before we jump down that rabbit hole, you know, if you kind of just look at the markets, back to Clayton's original question, right? You know, we're talking, you know, there's kind of really four stratifications, maybe five, if you want to say, of buckets of markets by population, right? I mean, you've got like New York and LA, which is obviously going to be 10 million headcount, right? So they've got a huge pool to pull, exactly, to like huge population pool to pull from. As a matter of fact, as I still live and breathe here in Manhattan, I'm actually thinking about heading out to the Yankees Marlins game, which, by the way, was another good one last night. You know, then you kind of jump down to that significant second trough down, right, where you've got Chicago all the way down to Dallas, right? And that ranges from 5 to 10 million is that stratification of population. And then you're going below that, three and below. And if you kind of peruse that list, right, Cincy is like literally the second to last in terms of population, right? But if you correlate that, and what's a really interesting topic here, just kind of statistically, if you correlate the population of Cincy of like 1 to 2 million people, right, in terms of population, but if you look at the strength of Cincinnati's attendance records, right? So Cincinnati averages, you guys are actually top three in the league in terms of average attendance. You aware of that?
Yeah, I know last year it went up like, what is it, like 43 or 47%. We were the highest out of anybody in MLB for like attendance last year.
It's that's crazy. Because of you, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, not because of Ellie De La Cruz getting called up, Matt McClain, and all those guys.
Yeah. but when you look at all those data points kind of triangulated, you know, one has to beg the question of, okay, well, that makes total sense. I mean, a layman might see that and say, well, Cincy must be doing well financially because they get the ticket sales and they're getting people in seats, right? But the correlation between actual attendance and what optically, I call it the smoke and mirrors aspect of baseball, right? Like optically people are showing up, optically it looks like they're sellouts, it's loud on TV, it makes for a good media boom, right? But the reality of the payroll is literally the inverse of that, right? So any perspective on that? I mean, the fan base in Cincy is second to none, obviously, right?
It's kind of hard for me to like speak on like this subject just because like I'm not a front office guy. Like I don't know the ins and outs and the moves that they make and the money that they're like. Of course, I can see the money they're spending on the players from year to year basis and contracts and all that stuff. But I mean, there's a lot more stuff that goes into detail. And like, I mean, everybody in the world knows if they go and look at how much money the owners make, like they know how that they pull in a large chunk of money each year. And could they spend it? Yes. Is there reason for them to save it? I'm sure there is. I mean, you know, it's their business. It's their decision at the end of the day. But I mean, you ask any of us, of course, we think they should spend some more money instead of sitting there just pocketing it all and not doing anything with it, you know. But yeah, that's just every baseball player, because they're making billions of dollars a year and we're like, well, they should be paying us more to play the game for them.
It's funny you bring that up. So we were talking yesterday about market cap for leagues, right? So I guess you could call it, in the U.S. we got five major leagues if you split it between hockey, basketball, baseball, football, and I guess you can include Clayton says soccer, right? I think soccer would be the fifth, right, Clayton?
Yeah.
So I did some digging, right? And so what is your guys' best guess on how much revenue top line the NBA, MLB, and NFL respectively pull in on an annualized basis?
I don't know. I don't care about the NBA, to be honest with you.
Nor do I.
Well, you can have it. Take it.
Relative to the business, though, I found something interesting that I thought you guys might find interesting too, right? So all three leagues have the identical amount of top line revenue. They all pull in $11 billion a year. The correlative factor, though, that I'm trying to highlight here is if you look at average player contracts across those three leagues, you've got basketball is the highest, football second, baseball third, right? And so I can't help but think that's very correlative to the media contracts that the leagues are getting, as well as the salary caps. And when I dug in a little bit further, and as you are probably aware of, with the with frankly the implosion of the media conglomerate that essentially runs every major baseball market. So you've got Diamond, right? If you guys are all familiar with Diamond.
That'd be a you thing. I just watch games, dude.
Well, so like what the layman doesn't understand is there was a huge rift on the media side. And so what we're seeing in this massive uptick in this year's baseball contract, so like the Dodgers, for example, unloading the clip on, Otani and that,
on players.
Yeah, like just crazy shit, right? Right. So at the end of the day, you've got this media conglomerate that's very quietly filed for bankruptcy, but all of the teams are still getting paid on the back end on it. And so one can't help but question and let's go back to the original point, does market size even matter at this point if you've got a national and global conglomerate behind all of the rev share at the end of the day? That's the real question.
Well, apparently it does, because there's still a disparity in payrolls.
Yeah, I mean that I don't think that's ever really going to change. I mean, and that's just because like these guys make enough money, like they, like not talking as in baseball players, but for like the owners, like they make enough money, they want to keep their money just like anybody else. You know, I mean, there might be an owner or two to where they're like, hey, there's a good chance we can win the World Series this year. Let's go out and try to tack some extra players on to kind of help our staff out and things like that. But I mean, at the end of the day, they're going to lock down their superstars if they can, and they're going to spend money on the guys that they think if they need. And other than that, they're just going to push and pull teeth as they can to try to save nickels and dimes. So,
all right, let me flip this question. You as a player in the MLB, would you rather be playing for what we'll call a small market club like the Reds or in New York City for the Yankees?
I'd rather play for the Reds all day long than go bump to New York.
Yeah,
you're not a big city guy, though.
I'm the wrong person to ask that question.
Well, that brings up another question. I know that Kevin alluded to a conversation that Clayton, Kevin, and I had previously, but I think that on a more or a lighter note, Kevin was asking about ballparks, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, as I'm about to go check out Yankee Stadium's monstrosity today, how many times did you pitch there?
I pitched there in my rookie season, only one time.
What was it like in Yankee Stadium?
I mean, I thought it was pretty cool. I mean, it's not my favorite stadium. I mean, the fans are not as bad as I thought they were going to be. I mean, they got heckled a little bit, but really not that bad. I mean, it's all right. I don't really have anything. Like, I don't have a positive or a negative to say.
Because I have a specific theory that, you know, after you cycle through enough of the stadiums, how many of the major league ballparks have you pitched? Are you pitching all of them or close to all?
I've pitched in probably close to half. But I will say here, this is the one thing I have about Yankee Stadium. Right field, is nowhere near the distance that it says it is. That thing is maybe close to 300 feet because balls get out there that should not get out at 320 feet or 325 feet, whatever the right field line is.
You guys are actually a much easier park to hit at in favor of the batters and the pitchers. That's statistically accurate, right?
We're I think last year we were second behind the Rockies in home runs.
Actually third behind both the Rangers and the Rockies respectively, so close.
And that's surprising. It's behind the Rangers because the Rangers, I've heard I haven't been to it yet, but the Rangers stadium is apparently like a graveyard. It's just deep everywhere.
I was watching a game. There's like this carve out in left field that's just super bizarre out there, right? It's like a, it looks like Tetris out there, but but anyways, back to where we were driving at, right? I just happen to have a theory that we could blindfold you in the middle of the sixth inning. So is there a sense that we could just drop you into a random ballpark where you have no idea where in the hell you are and you'll actually know exactly where you are?
I mean, not really. I mean, it's like there's some places to where, like, if I'm on the pitcher's mound, like looking at home, like it might feel like you're a little bit higher up in elevation to where you're just kind of looking down on the plate and it seems like you're placing the ball in the mitt because it feels so close. And then there's some places you pitch at and home plate feels like it's a mile and a half away. But
like, you got examples of that? I'd love to hear that.
I would say Atlanta's kind of like a mix in between. Like if you're, it kind of just depends because when they, like, I would say more so when teams have that behind home plate instead of having like a brick wall or like padding or anything like that, and it's just the net that goes all the way to the base of the grass, that makes home plate seem really far away because there's nothing to like give you that depth perception of where it's at. But then if you have, like, if you're pitching at like Miami, they have a tall mound, they have a big backstop, and it's a little bit closer to home, so it makes home plate feel like, instead of it being at 60 foot 6 inches, it feels like it's at 50 foot. And it just gives it that depth perception of it being closer.
All right, so let's talk about dropping you into a ballpark. You're flying West Coast, you're flying somewhere on the East Coast. I have an interesting question that people might like to hear. Let's say you guys rent a Delta jet to go to a game. What determines the seating on the plane? Who gets the first class seats? Who gets the Comfort Plus seats? And who gets the shaft?
Well, it depends on what plane we're in. If we're in what we call the show plane, which has poker tables and everything is a first class seat. And, or if we're in what we call the normal plane, which is the three and three, it has three rows, three seats and on each side. Then on that,
Kevin and I fly in regularly.
There's no first class on those seats. You're just sitting in a normal seat.
That's not good for a big guy like you.
Well, you got your own row, so you can sprawl out.
Maybe a little.
Sounds like you're flying Southwest on that one.
Yeah.
The real question for the single guy down there is, what's the flight attendant situation like on those planes?
You're trying to get me in trouble.
No, don't answer the question.
Take the bait. Cut that part out, Clayton.
Don't take the bait.
Berman's good enough at getting himself in trouble, so he understands the sentiment.
We honestly, I couldn't even tell you half the time because we're playing cards and we got like eight guys on one table. We're just locked in. So,
yeah. Rehab, half the guys are rehabbing. So it's just a mess.
Speaking of the trouble Berman can get you in, are you familiar with the term dooring, Graham?
Dooring.
Dooring. Wasn't that it, Kevin?
Door. Oh, my God.
Like doors, like if you get you blow a fastball by somebody and you blow their doors out. Like,
no, if you have a weak bladder and got to go to the bathroom in the middle of Miami and need to exit the vehicle quickly, and as you're exiting the vehicle, someone on a bike comes by and smashes the side of your vehicle and then goes tumbling over the bike, lands in the gutter. And you don't find out until a week or two later that that is a scam that they do and big cities like Miami. It had nothing to do with his timing of opening the door to the vehicle.
Who did this?
Me. You know, this girl was coming down this this bridge in Brickell with more velocity than one of your fastballs, and she just like drills the door and flies off, and we're, me, John, and Brenda are just like freaking out, right? And this girl's like a WWE impersonator, we find out, after the lawyers do digging, and she's flopping around like a Miami Marlin down there on the sidewalk.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's a thing, man.
Thanks for bringing that up there, John. But actually, it's a great segue to a question I actually have as well that's kind of along the lines of bogus claims. We think Trevor Bauer is ever going to pitch again? And by the way, do you know Trevor?
I know Trevor very slightly. He was with us in 1920, or was it – I think it was 20 and 21 –
You mean 2020?
Yeah, he was with us there in 2020 because I remember we were in early camp to help fill in with the big league games during spring training. And him and Michael Lorenzen came over and talked with us a little bit. And then, and I mean, I never really had one-on-one conversation with him, but you would like to think a guy that's won a Cy Young and made $40 million through arbitration and was one of the great pitchers coming up through his time coming up would get another chance. But it's also one of those very weird circumstances to where he kind of shot himself in the foot with when he talked bad about our commissioner and all that stuff. And there's just things like you can't go talk bad about your boss. Right. And think you can get away with it and that he's just going to let you do what you want to do. Like, you can't do that.
I mean, so. There's a lot of talk around Spencer Strider right now getting injured. He's out. And I heard they were looking at Trevor. And I'm like, be an interesting pickup.
I mean, it would, but I would be happy for Trevor because, I mean, it sucks for him with everything that happened that it's led the way that it's led. And I know there's still a lot of people out there that have harsh things to say about him. And I know it's probably just because the way he has the way he's done everything up until that point. But also, like, it was a false accusation. The guy shouldn't be punished and his career get pulled out from under him because of the whole circumstance.
We need to get Trevor on here, Clayton.
Oh boy, that would be an interesting conversation.
Well, I mean, listen, like at the end of the day, I think Graham's on the money, right? Like you can't put yourself in compromisable situations, right? You can't. I mean, you're a pro, but at the same time, there's also the aspect that we're kind of tap dancing around, which is he was literally innocent of the entire thing. The girl fabricated it, right? So, you know, if anything, on the flip side, it just highlights the need for you guys in the league to just be very careful about who you associate with. Obviously, as you jump on a podcast with all of us clowns.
Yeah. Which one's the circus leader?
I don't know, man. I still have to figure.
The one with the Bass Pro hat.
Yeah, the one with the Bass Pro hat. Speaking of fabricating, do you hunt and fish, Berman?
Do I hunt fish? I do, actually. I bought this physically from a Bass Pro shop where I also acquired a series of handguns that are currently now at my home. Yes.
So what's your favorite weapon?
My favorite weapon? You know, you turned me on to it. I just actually picked up a crossbow. And so,
Jesus Christ.
Well, to your point on hunting, I've never hunted with the bow yet, so I'm going to come out with these guys to the farm in Kentucky at some point, so I can kind of learn how to use it. But you know, this boy from Chicago, you know, never really grew up with them, you know. So,
Graham, you ever used a crossbow before?
Yeah, I used your crossbow and shot a 9-point last year.
There you go. And what is your favorite weapon aside from a crossbow?
I would definitely say my actual bow. There's just something about taking the deer with using archery setup.
Compound bow?
Yeah.
Because I do have a friend that will hunt with a longbow from time to time.
I'm not trying to get specific with that thing. That's too much practice.
Like an actual, like, typical archery bow?
Yeah, like a wooden longbow.
Old English wars, yeah.
Like, why?
I mean, some people are really good at it. I mean, it just takes, those things take a lot of practice to have to sit there and instinctually shoot without having a sight.
Well, I'm going to take it the opposite direction. I actually haven't told John yet, but I caught up with a good buddy of mine up in North Texas. He just retired on a buyout of a consulting firm, John, you'd be familiar with, but he bought a ranch, and apparently they got a hog issue there. So he's got a buddy with a helicopter, and they mount machine guns on the side of it, and they just go to town.
I've seen that on YouTube.
Yeah.
Oh, Larry's been asking. We should all take a trip down to North Texas at some point. It's in between. Essentially, he's in between the Red River and on the border in Dallas, so somewhere in that vicinity. I don't know exactly where.
Need to see what pilot he uses, because I actually had a guy that had my same last name. He was an Ashcraft from Texas, and we have no idea if we're related because my dad's from Texas.
What'd your mailman look like?
he messaged me and that he's a pilot out in Tyler, Texas, and that would be right around the area that you're talking about, in between.
That's exactly where they're.
And he is a helicopter hog hunting pilot. And he messaged me and he was like, dude, I don't know if we're related or not, but if you ever want to come hunt, just hit me up.
Tyler, Texas is where my wife is from.
Really?
Yep.
Yep. And that's where Clayton's bachelor party was. And we went on a hog hunt, not on the ground, not elevated position, but.
Well, what would be how small of a world would that be if that's actually would be the case? That'd be nuts. That would be nuts.
It would be nuts. So taking us a little different direction, Graham, I was it occurred to me when I last attended a Reds game, the guy behind me was talking, and he played college ball. And at some point, when we were coming or going, I noticed, you know, he had the beard and somewhat long hair. And I've noticed with some of the Reds players that it's become a trend, and other players in the league. So how long has this been a trend in baseball? Because it seems to me like on those hot days, the more hair you got, the hotter it gets.
Hold on. Let me start. This is the longest mine's ever been, and it's driving me insane. Is it a girl thing? Because my wife's like, oh, why don't you grow it out a little bit? And I'm like, oh, well, you want like a man bun? She goes, hell no, not that long. I'm like, then what am I doing this for?
You know, it's funny. And actually, before you even answer, I've got some speculation on this one. I actually think it's the inverse. I think it's so, living in Vegas, right? It's play baseball. It's Vegas is baseball city, USA, right? Chris Bryant land. And, you know, you got a lot of teams cycling in and out, you know, nationally into tournaments. And it's just for some reason it turned into like this destination for baseball. But I can tell you this, like, over the past 5 to 7 years or so, I was seeing kids doing that crap way before I was seeing the pros do it. I'm almost wondering if it was like a reverse fad, right? Like the kids started wearing the blenders. The kids started with the mullets and all the crazy hair. Like, I'm almost wondering if like the pros picked up on it from like Little League. I'm dead serious. Like, I'm pretty sure that's happened.
I don't know, but if we get the right 12 players from the Reds, I think we can do a recreation of the Last Supper.
some John Crock mullets, man.
I mean, it's hard to really say. I mean, I feel like most of the guys that had long hair, they kind of had it. Like Friedel had it in the minor leagues before we made it up in 21. Yeah. Fraley had long hair before he got to us. I mean, I just kind of said screw it in 21 before in 2021, 2022, and just started growing out what I called the mud flap back then, or the beaver tail. And
Ooh, I got a question for you. Do you care to share the story of what Kyle Newman told you last year that you told me about in regards to your hair and your...
You mean Kevin Newman?
Yeah, that's it. Kevin Newman. That's it. That's the one. Uh-huh.
That he so I had my hair. I had my hair cut short. And I still had my beard. Like, I had just the normal trim around the side with a little length up top. And he looked at me one day and he was like, you need to grow your hair back out. He was like, dude, when you had a mullet and a beard, and he's like, I don't know why, but you're just intimidating as shit on the mound.
Hey, listen, man. Okay, you didn't create that. The Wild Thing created that. All right. You thank Charlie Sheen for that.
Right? Hey, I had the Wild Thing haircut freshman year of college to open up my college career.
For the love of God, can you please, you will make ESPN front page news. Start walking out the Wild Thing and freaking put the lightning bolts in your hair, man. It'll create a whole new persona.
Hey, speaking of which, if you had a walk-up song, I know you were a pretty strong hitter back in the day, your younger days, but if you had a walk-up song, what would it be, Graham?
The one I used in high school was Load Up the Bases. I can't remember who the artist of that song is.
That's a deep dive. I don't even recognize the name of that
song.
Yeah,
I'm not familiar with that one, so.
By Whiskey Falls, Load Up the Bases.
We'll have to check it out.
So let's go back to actually something we just said 2 seconds ago. So, good hitter, great hitter, awesome hitter. How good of a hitter were you?
I'm going to catch crap from this if my teammates hear this, but my junior year, I was third in the country for home runs in high school.
So in this world that we live in with Ohtani just blasting dingers, like, why are
and
you
I hit the left side not, too.
Why are you not DH-ing? Like,
they asked me to hit when I was at Mississippi State, and I was like, no, I'm just going to focus on pitching.
Why not?
I mean, I used to take BP and double A, and I cleared the trash panda stadium. Hit it into the parking lot.
Dude, come on, man.
You could be like that kid from LSU that was a pitcher, and they put him in to pinch hit in the ninth inning.
No, yeah, never took an AP in his life. And
yeah, he's like, his coach goes, yeah, hey, man, hey, Todd, have you ever hit? He's like, yeah, I used to hit nukes in high school, dude. And then in the post-game press conference, they're talking, and he stops himself middle of talking about it, and he's like, coach, I'm not going to lie to you. I hit a batting practice a couple of times, but they never let me hit in high school, and he ended up hitting a homer in the game.
You know, if you get to take one thing away from these Cincy Maniacs here, it's going to be you're going to get up to bat this season, man. Get up to that plate.
No.
Get up to the
That's
plate.
A different man. Game. That's a different game now. Guys throw way too hard.
It's like riding a bike.
Hell no. I was seeing 87 to 92, like 95 max.
Yeah. Well, just wait for an off speed pitch. Stepping up
in there and having somebody come in throwing 100. No chance.
Well, before we jump into the next topics here, I did have one kind of off agenda item here I wanted to talk about. Because John and I go left and right, back and forth on this one. What do you think about the shift and what they did to the shift? I seriously want to understand. I mean, if I'm you and I'm a pitcher, I'm getting so pissed off that, like, teams are getting so close to, like, what it used to be that they built the rule around. Like, it's almost like draw a line where the shortstop and the third base and the second baseman can play and don't go outside of that, right? Like, the rule was don't go past second base, but these dudes are posting up, like, right on that equator line. And statistically and analytically, it's like, if I'm you, I'm like, what the hell was that?
I mean, for certain guys, it makes sense. I mean, guys that are more off-speed heavy or they just don't – they're not throwing 100 miles an hour and their guys aren't going to just be late all the time on their stuff, it makes sense because if you're going to be an off-speed guy, guys are going to be out front. They're going to pull the ball, so you need to have guys shift it over because they're not going to try to sit back and go oppo because they know that they're – better chance of getting a hit if they hit it hard and pull the ball. So,
yep.
I mean, I'm glad they don't have the shift to where like it was to where you could have the first base, second base, and shortstop all on the same side of the bag. I think that's good that that's gone, because it just, that was just too much. But I mean, like me personally as a pitcher, I'm a big ground ball guy, and guys hit a lot of ball oppo off me just because I have hard, heavy stuff.
Yep.
So I don't like the shift just for that reason, because it, if guys shift heavy on me, I'm going to, they're going to get beat. They're not going to be able to get to the ball, because it's going to go into the six hole or down the third base line from a lefty, or in the four hole from a righty.
Do you as a pitcher know like where the shift's going to be, or do they just not concern you with the shift?
No, I mean, our info coach goes through. I mean, he's been seeing me pitch and knowing how my stuff works for the past, going on for the third season now. So he knows pretty much where to play guys. And like there is times where certain hitters, like say if it's like Freddie Freeman, because has great hands, he can get to the inside part of the plate with his bat. He can cover it very well, so he has that better chance of being able to pull those balls and being able to get his hands around it. Then if it's somebody else that's not as good at covering the inside part of the plate, like, you know, they're going to probably punch the ball the opposite way because they can't catch up to it inside.
Well, as your coach is working on positioning things on the infield, is he going to work a little more on fielding the bunt?
I mean, are you talking about Andrew's game?
Yeah.
I mean, a shit show.
That circumstance, you can't really do anything about. Like, you can't expect two to three guys to come up and bunt back to back. Like that, I have nothing to say about that, because I don't know. Like, that just frustrated all of us in the dugout, because it's good play on their part from the game side of it, but also from like the player side of it. You're like, swing the bat, don't be a soft ass. Like, come on. You got guys in scoring position already, but yet you're going to drop another bunt down.
Like, well, if it works, why wouldn't you?
And that's what I say from the game's like standpoint of it. It was a great idea, but from the player's standpoint, we're like, what the hell?
It's attention to detail.
Are we talking about Espinal's bunt the other day?
No. Andrew Abbott, when he was pitching, and it was either a first pitch walk or a single, and then they went bunt to get bases loaded.
Hey, listen, you can't say soft ass in regards to bunting when you got someone like Friedel that's going to get 15 bunt hits a year because he's actually good at it and he practices it.
That's why I said from the game standpoint, it makes sense. But from the player standpoint, because when we do it and we're safe, it's great. We're fired up and excited because it was the right play. But when it happens against us, especially two times back-to-back ABs, you're like, all right, somebody swing the damn bat.
Yeah, but like I'll tell you this, though. Like, the opposite happens more than what we're talking about. We're talking about the exception of the rule. I personally witnessed the Pirates and the Marlins opening day in Miami. The Marlins had runners on the corners with one out, and it was a tie ball game, bottom of the ninth. That's a situation all day, every day, you bunt. You put that bunt down to get that run in, right? But they didn't. And they ended up going into extra innings. They ended up losing the game. Like, let's talk about bunting for a second. Why are teams so allergic to bunt in general? Like, I've noticed that as a trend.
That's just because it's kind of like it's honestly gone out of style until like last year. I honestly think Friedel last year, getting however many hits he had as a bunt last year, It kind of opened eyes to teams again about it, because everybody got so adapted to, oh, I want to hit the long ball. I want to hit the ball 110 somewhere. Like, and just got away, especially like the fast guys. Like, you maybe saw, God, who was it I'm trying to think of right now? Hamilton, you saw him, Billy Hamilton. I think he was probably the only person that would bunt. And that's just because he would utilize the speed. And not a lot of people, either they weren't comfortable butting because they weren't good at it, or they just weren't quick enough to get down the line to be safe.
I think that was the only time Billy got on was when he bunted.
So, hey, side note, isn't TJ from Vegas?
He lives in Vegas.
He does in the offseason.
Oh, Berman, you can hang out with him.
Well, he played in Nevada, didn't he?
For him.
Yeah, he played in Reno, right? But I just bring that up as an aside. It's where I live now. But at any rate, so going back to it, though, right, I want to touch on something John said earlier, right? Like, so one thing about John on the phone here, John preaches fundamentals. And I'm not just talking about with sports. You ever work with this guy, it's all about fundamentals, man. I feel like I'm with my AAU coach or one of my Little League coaches when I'm working with John, right? But it's all, he's always consistent, right?
So let me add a description to that. If we were a car battery, you and I would be the red wire and he would be the black wire.
Yes, right? always, right?
I resemble that remark.
It's a good one. But I guess the point is why did bunting ever go out of style? Like, it just drives me nuts because, like, in the major leagues, out of style, but right is right, and, you know, the way you should do things is the way you should do things, fundamentally speaking. You got all these kids watching. All these kids need to learn how to play this game, but yet, you know, I guess another example of this is, like, guys just not running through first base, right? Like, that's, like, the classic example of, like, pros kind of dogging it because they're pros, like, quote-unquote, but to me, it drives me nuts when I see a team that should be laying a bunt down and they just don't. I guess that's just me on my side.
I mean, it's really hard to say. If I was a hitter, I could probably give you a better answer on it. But it's just one of those things. I mean, you just rarely saw it unless it was like 100% needed in like a do or die situation with a close game. And I mean, I feel like you're going to start seeing it more and more because – I mean, there's a lot of fast young prospects that are coming up. And people are starting to realize, like, they're getting played back on a lot more. The shift's a little bit heavier to where they can drop that bunt down the third base line because the third baseman's shifted into the six hole. And just things like that. I mean, it's honestly hard to give an exact reason, but I mean, I think you're going to start seeing it more and more in the game.
But in regards to the bunt, with someone that throws like you do, Graham, and the movement you have on your pitches, how hard does that make it to actually lay that bunt down, do you think? And you're
please
gonna
turn around bunt. It's a free strike. you're not gonna be able to if you're gonna put the bat on it, you're either gonna hit the top of the ball and pop and hit it straight down and it's gonna be foul, or you're gonna hit the bottom of it and pop it up. If you can center up one of my fastballs, my cutter or my sinker, and get it on the ground, good for you. I'll give it to you all day. But you better hope it's not right at me to where I can make a play on it. It's a free out, in my opinion.
Fair enough.
As you're ramping up pitching, and I would say the antithesis or the argument of why bunting's not existing, I think pitching's gotten extremely more challenging for hitters over the past, you know, half decade even or so, right? Just with technology that exists for arm strength, curveball velocity is significantly up, breaking ball velocity in general is significantly up, partially why we're seeing a lot of guys blowing their elbows out more and more these days. But do you think the pitching has a lot to do with it as well?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you got to imagine, like, when guys were bunting a lot and stuff, I mean, it was back when, like, Greg Maddux was pitching and you had guys that had a lot of movement, but it was coming in at 88, 90. Now you got guys that are pitching that are throwing 100 and it's moving, it's sinking, it's cutting, it's rising, it's doing all types of stuff. So, I mean, I felt like when the velo started to tick up, like, it just, maybe guys got scared from wanting to turn around because they're afraid they were going to sit there and turn around, and try to bunt and take it off the face. I mean, yeah. It's just, like I said earlier, it's just hard for me to make a comment on like the hitting side of things when I'm not a hitter.
Controversial question. When you see someone squaring up the bunt, how you throwing the ball at them?
I'm throwing it right at their fist.
Inside, baby. Tighten inside.
that hand that's holding that barrel to aim wherever they want that thing to go, it's going right towards it.
Yeah.
All right, so I got one for you. So you said Friedel maybe changed the game in regards to bunting after last year. So we could call him, we'll say, a game changer. We'll call that a modern day term for somebody. So Berman, I want you to do me a favor. Our friend here is great with pop culture. Do you think you can give him a quick pop culture quiz and see if he has any good answers?
You mean your dad, right?
No, I'm talking about Berman.
Pop culture for Graham?
Yeah.
Pop culture. All right.
Dude, you're white chocolate. Come on, bro.
How many ways can you eat chili and Cincy?
I'm from Alabama. I like beans in my chili, so I'm not eating it.
You can get beans in it.
That's one way to eat it with beans. That's called a five-way.
All right, I'm gonna ask you one. I actually don't even know the answer to, but I'm gonna ask it. Name all the Kardashians. I'll wait.
Couldn't tell you.
They know. All right. Who is Ari Gold?
Oh,
that's a good one.
I'm not gonna know a damn thing that you ask me. I'm just telling you.
You don't know who Ari Gold is?
Yeah, come on, man.
Have you seen?
I don't know. Get a big gold. Come on, man.
Yeah,
I'm telling you.
All right, here's a question for you. If you had a vanity license plate, what would it say?
Hell, I don't know. I just get them to give me one every time I go to the DMV.
Well, mine would say child, please.
Well, why doesn't it? You can buy a vanity plate. You saying you're too cheap to buy a vanity plate?
Yeah, he is. He's
bingo. That's the accountant in me.
Do you know who came up with the term or frequently use the term child, please?
Justin, you?
Nope.
No, but it was a Cincinnati person.
Uh-huh. Bengals player.
Ocho Cinco?
Yep. Get ready to kiss the baby. Kiss the baby.
You know, I just saw that guy in a commercial for BetMGM. Like, what, over under $1 million. How much do we think is in his bank account right now?
He's frugal.
Oh, yeah.
He is?
Over a million. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
What?
Oh, yeah.
He would talk about the fact that while all these football players are getting dressed up in expensive suits and expensive jewelry, he was going and buying the cheap jewelry that looked like the real thing because he wasn't paying that kind of money for it.
Yeah, he would go to Claire's.
That's ridiculous.
The dude slept on the couch for a year in the clubhouse and ate McDonald's every day because he could get back.
Must say, didn't he eat a dollar menu every day?
Yeah, and he always said, hey, man, you work out right, you can eat however you want.
We got to get him on the show.
And then he's made it known to the public on other podcasts that he used to take a Viagra before every football game.
I don't want to go there.
For what?
He got hit by – he tried to hit Ray Lewis one time.
The coach is that's a true – he said that on Shannon Sharp's podcast.
Yeah, and coach is like, what were you thinking? What were you thinking? Coach, I took a Viagra before the game. I was trying to get Ray. He figured it out.
So Chad Ochocinco has 8 children with 3 baby mamas.
That's better than what's his name, Nick Cannon.
Oh, he's like 12.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's 10 got baby one mamas. For every kid he got.
Oh, wait, he knows something about pop culture.
Pop culture?
Yeah.
How many minutes did it take?
The only reason I know that one is because my wife watches, what is that show, The Selling Sunset, and one of his baby mamas is on there, and she told me all about it.
Well, you should talk more with your wife. She might get you up to speed.
Yeah.
It goes in one ear, out the other.
So top 5 batters you don't want to face. What's your list? Starting with least to
I mean, there's not really anybody that I don't want to face. I mean, I would say like the hardest A, like the people that take the hardest ABs off me.
Yep.
Would be Acuna, Freeman. I mean, I would say Harper just because he tagged me twice in one game, but I've only faced him once. So it's kind of hard to say him, but I mean, dude's a great hitter.
Yeah, well, come on, man. He's coming out of a slump. He was wearing a hoodie that made him look like an alien. I would have
Did you see what he was wearing that night? Child, please.
I'd have been freaked out if I was. I'd have just been like, all right, hit the softball. I don't want to look at you anymore. Take it out. Take it yards. Go sit down.
And then
yeah, but you pitched good that game, man. So you had you know, two.
I had five Ks through six, and he was the only two runs I gave up.
Yeah, but there's solo homers. You'll live with that, right?
Yeah.
But you didn't even go three balls on a batter until the fifth. That's pretty efficient.
Yeah. Honestly, I have those three. Who's Goldschmidt? He always has a good AB off me.
Yeah, he's a good hitter though. I like it. Like, I feel like every pitcher in the league would say that about him.
Yeah,
limited to you. But hey, how about this? We were talking about have you pitched against the Padres yet?
This year or just
last year or this year?
Last year I pitched against them twice,
and I think I only gave up one run in like 13 innings.
Yeah. Fantastic.
So, taking things in a different direction, Graham, when you're not pitching, you're in the dugout, right? So, to a degree, like a fan, you kind of observe what's going on in the ballpark. Are there any ballparks that I guess have neat traditions or things they do that you've observed as you're sitting there?
I mean, Yankee Stadium, the roll call, that's pretty cool to see. Trying to think if anybody does anything like super special.
The Mets with Diaz coming onto the mound, the trumpets.
I mean, yeah, but we do the same thing for our Diaz.
Ours is better.
Reason number 100, we got to get Trevor Bauer back in league. His individual crap was fun to watch.
Yeah, outfield stand.
Like, man, other than like the Yankees roll call, I can't really think of something specific that a team does. I mean, it's normally it's just like every other game.
All right. Well, speaking of parks, let's change it up a little bit here. You sent me a picture from the locker room yesterday with your little buddy.
Yeah, with this guy.
Is he our guest today on the podcast? What's up, Hankers? What's up, buddy? So what's the rule on dogs in the ballpark?
I mean, it's not up to the MLB. It's up to the team. Like, it's just up to the manager and the head clubhouse guy.
Can you do it like they do on airplanes nowadays and just go online and get a service dog vest to slap on him?
No.
People do that on planes all the time now.
Oh, yeah. They just go print one out, little false little service dog.
Uh-huh.
No, you don't need that.
You think you can get Hank to be a ball boy?
I wish. He'd take off. He would be so stressed out with all those people and fans cheering and stuff. He'd run out there and then just start looking around all over the place, not knowing what's going on.
Is Hank a hunting dog?
Oh, yeah. He's my duck hunting buddy.
See? So he's good at fetching stuff.
He's here with me for the next 3 weeks while my puppy gets fixed on Friday.
Uh-huh. So the Vegas Aviators, AAA affiliate of the A's, they have a bat dog. The dog is trained to get the bat. You should train your dog to get the bat.
I wish, but he's already 5 years old, so I don't know if. And it's like, and that's part of the reason I say like the fan stuff. Like, I don't know if I did work with him on that and then got him in that situation with their chance of being 35,000 people there. And he runs out to go get a bat and people start cheering because they see a dog on the field.
Yeah.
If he wouldn't just
freak out,
immediately stop and be like, what's going on? Like,
yeah. Well, 35,000 cheer if they saw white chocolate on the field.
Oh, yeah. But especially since, unlike Graham, I'd actually get to the plate and try to hit. hey, but speaking of the Aviators, all right? So minor league ball, have you been to a AAA game? Have you played in a AAA game? Yeah. So you're familiar with the replay system they put in place to test?
No, no, that's all new. I wasn't in there when they had all that.
All right, it's badass, first off. So, yeah, like,
I talked with Lodolo because he got to use it on his rehab start, and he was like, dude, it's awesome.
Oh, it's beyond awesome, right? Because when the ump behind the plate shits the bed, because when we're watching the game on TV, right, we see the box, right? And so you throw – let's say you throw a ball just slightly outside, but it nicks the box, and it's a ball. You know, the humans behind the plate are, you know, their call stands, right? Why is the MLB not rolled that out yet? Do you have any idea?
Well, this is the first year they're implementing it into the minor league season. So they've
been doing it for 2 years now. I've been going to those Aviator games.
Double A, it wasn't in Triple A. So now it's in Triple A. And
it was Triple A, man. The Aviators are Triple A. They've been doing it for 2 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Been going to the stadiums right by my house out there in Summerlin. But it's badass because essentially you get, I think, six challenges. And the manager does, right? So he'd look at you and be like, and you'd be like, you know, replay. If they win it, they get that back. If they lose it, they're down to five so forth, right?
Like I understand that it could be a good thing, but it's also one of those things from the player standpoint for us. If we allow that to happen, then the next thing you know, the automated strike zone is going to be coming into play.
Why don't you want that? Why wouldn't you want that as a pitcher, though?
Because my shit moves. If I throw a sinker up and into a righty and it's just off the inside corner of the box, but the umpire calls it a strike, I don't want them to be able to challenge that or the automated strike zone say it was a ball. It was a great pitch. I mean, I threw it where I wanted to. He took it, and the umpire called it a strike. Same thing with a slider. If I throw a slider and it's just at the bottom of the zone, but the umpire calls it a strike for strike three and the guy didn't chase it, I mean, I don't want that to be taken away from me, you know?
Clayton's kids like me to play Would You Rather. Would you rather have the automated strike zone or Angel Hernandez making that call?
Angel Hernandez. I knew it was coming.
Right, yeah.
At any rate, we're about on time here, yeah?
Yep. Yes, sir. I think somebody has to go throw a pen session today.
Well, with Dolo coming back, we're going to a six-man, I think, for this road trip. So,
is that exciting?
Does that mean you're pushed back a day?
Yeah, I'm going to throw Sunday in Chicago against the White Sox. Dolo's got Saturday. Weather depending.
Well, hey, you know what? Ironically, I think the game we saw you pitch in spring training was against the White Sox, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And that was the last time Dylan Cease wore a White Sox uniform, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, before he got traded.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Well,
Any other questions?
Not a big fan of Benintendi, so feel free to plunk him in the back. Edit that one out too.
Hey, he's a Cincinnati boy. Get out of here, man.
And hey. He eats Skyline chili.
Unlike somebody we know that's on this call.
Well, good for him.
Even more reason. Grammy from Cincy, you don't give a shit. Right in the back.
I like my colon intact.
Hey, it ain't that bad.
And you want beans with it. I thought they were roughage.
Yeah, I also don't want cinnamon in my chili.
Oh,
chili's not meant to be sweet. That's just my opinion.
All right, boys. Well, that was a fun one. Anyone have any other questions before we end this thing? Graham, you got, hey, you know what? Do you have a question from our Vegas expert? Not in terms of betting, but if you ever go to Vegas, the hot spots to go to?
I'll just get them dialed in with my boys over on the strip, man, if you ever want to come through the town.
I'd have to see if the wife would want to go before that trip was made.
Just go with TJ, man. He knows where to go.
I don't even know if they really go downtown.
Oh, wait. I got one thing to close this out on. This may or may not get used, but Berman, can you recap the story about
a certain pro athlete
for Graham?
Which one?
One in regards to renting your house.
Oh, yeah. So my wife wanted to – yeah, so my wife wanted to move. Yeah, this is jogging my memory. I've blacked it out to this point. This psychopath wanted to come in and modify my house in the agreement to add all sorts of crazy crap, including a quote unquote adult room. And my wife's like, well, what's an adult room? Help me understand what an adult room is. And so I'm like, hell no. Goodbye. So he ends up renting a house. So get this. This is actually a true story. He ends up renting the house like almost behind me. So like, and where we're at, we back up to, you know, in Vegas. So our pro team originally was the Vegas Golden Knights, right? So the Golden Knights, they have a large contingency of their players, like Jonathan Marchessault, you know, some names you may or may not know if you follow hockey or pay attention to hockey, but Mark Stone, like some of the really good players, Marc-Andre Fleury, the goalie who won the Stanley Cup a few years ago. Anyways, they're all in the neighborhood next to me, but you know who else is in that neighborhood? OJ Simpson. All right, so that's my story. I guess Clayton wanted me to lay out there, but I've got some funnier ones from Vegas lately. We're running out of time, but you know, I've been seeing Dana White a whole lot lately from UFC. So have you ever heard of Happy Dad Seltzer?
No.
There's this group that runs around called the Nelk Boys, and so a bunch of degenerate Vegas gamblers got together, and they're just literally filming like YouTubes that they're getting compensated for. And they're taking that money and just like laying ridiculous bets at the casino.
Oh, I've heard about them. The ones that go play like $50,000, $100,000 hands on blackjack and stuff.
Yeah, right. So like, I'm dialed in with that crew because one of the dudes from the Nelk Boys I met just happenstance was I was eating dinner at T-Bones, which is a steakhouse at Red Rock, but they all got kicked off of the strip for all that crap they were playing because none of the strip casinos want to deal with that type of volume of gambling because they'll come and they'll hit it and they'll quit it in like 10 minutes, right? And that's the opposite of what they want.
All right, boys, that was a good way to end it. Graham got a good story out of that. If you haven't noticed, Berman is quite the frequent traveler, given the fact that he actually went to watch opening day Miami Marlins versus the Pirates. I don't know who would do that. And when he flew to visit us here in Melbourne to go fishing a couple years ago, his quote was, "Now I'm on a damn gum packet with wings as an airplane."
It's a pack of bubble gum with wings is actually it. So that came from my good man Ron White. That's comedian of all time. If you haven't heard that, just go listen to it.
They call me Tater Salad.
Yeah. Hey, man. I didn't want to be drunk in public.
That's right.
All right, fellas. Well, thank you today for joining in. That was a good one. Thanks, Graham, for your time. Thanks, Berman, for your time. Go down to Gothenburg and get you a smash burger, buddy.
I'm literally doing that right now. I'll send you a picture.
Yeah, I sent him a message, told him you were coming in, so we'll see if he's there. Ask for Mike Puma when you go in.
Perfect. All right, guys. Graham, good luck, man. Go hurl some rocks, baby.
Appreciate it. We'll see y'all.
Cheers.
See ya.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's all we have today. Thank you for joining in. Next week, we are going to have Kevin Berman back on the podcast. We're going to talk a little bit about sports in general. We'll probably talk about the status of the Reds currently. And we're going to get into maybe a little bit of some fun stuff because it's Kevin Berman and it's always something funny. You never know what's going to happen. So tune in next week for another entertaining and quite possibly very comical episode. Whatever, whatever. How about that, Redlegs fans? See you next week.